This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning in studio, we'll have a political forum, and our guests today include incumbent Tim Rudd and Tucker Markham, both running for State House of Representatives in District 34. Well, how are both of y'all doing this morning?
Doing well, Scott.
Well, good. I guess let's first start out where each of you tell a little bit about yourselves, maybe about your background, why you decided to run, why you decided to run originally, and then we'll go from there.
Good morning, Scott. Appreciate y'all having us on, and appreciate y'all hosting this morning. Appreciate Tim for being here as well. You know, we challenged him to three debates, chickened out of some invitations from some other organizations, but glad we would be here this morning to talk about some of the big issues. I think it's very important that folks have an opportunity to ask questions, to hear directly from their elected officials and candidates for public office, especially nowadays when it seems like you need a search warrant and a SWAT team to get a hold of some of our elected officials and find them. So appreciate y'all hosting. I think it's very, very important. I'm running for state representative to tackle the real issues facing our community, to be accessible, be present, and work for the folks in District 34 in Rutherford County more than the silk suit wearing lobbyists and special interest groups up in Nashville. I'm born and raised in Rutherford County, grew up in the Rockvale community, attended Eagleville, Rockvale, Central Magnet all for various periods of time. Honored to have the endorsement and support of over 15 local elected officials, and they know what you and I know, that too many folks get into these elected offices and get a little fat and happy and really forget the folks that they're supposed to be working for, which is the folks in those districts. Excited to answer questions. I work in energy development, contract out with energy developers to work on getting project approval and through the permitting process for various projects across the South, particularly. Serve as vice chairman of the Rutherford County Public Building Authority, which has been a great opportunity to be able to watch taxpayer dollars while we're looking at building these county government projects, and has been a good intro to see just how frustrating government can be at times. But excited to answer some questions and especially compare representation styles. Thank you.
And that was Tucker Markham, and now Tim Rudd, over to you.
Hey, thank you, Scott. Thank you for having me. Well, I'll tell you, I've been here, I'll be 64 in November. I first moved to Rutherford County when I was 7 years old, and I grew up here in Murfreesboro in Smyrna, and I've been a part of the community for a long time. And in 1984, I walked into the Republican headquarters and get a sign, and I've been active in grassroots politics ever since. I ran for public office for the first time 8 years ago and was elected state representative. Before that, I was a state executive committeeman, and I was a party chairman, precinct chairman, volunteered. And throughout all those years, I have been conservative on every issue imaginable. And I have the same person today I was then. I'm proud of my record as a state legislator. We have fought crime. We have lowered taxes. We have addressed everything imaginable. We've outlawed as much as we can at the state level for illegal immigration. And recently in the current session, I addressed a nationwide problem of squatting, people moving into abandoned properties, and outlawed that. It's being used as a template around the country now. Additionally, we have fought to deregulate and fund improvements, over $3 billion in highway improvements, over $1 billion here in Rutherford County recently, and more planned. We've increased funding in that K-12 education by over $3 billion. Hundreds of millions into broadband into rural areas. Most of Rutherford County is covered now where it's available. There are certain areas where they're isolated end of long stretches that they haven't gotten to yet. They're getting to that, so that's a very proud accomplishment. We've recently passed legislation that allows trusts for farmers if they want to set aside their trust for long-term protection. Tax incentives there. Of course, we've also took care of bridges and other improvements here. I'm proud of the work we've done. There's always more to do, but I'm very proud of this county and everything that we've been able to accomplish.
And that was Tim Rudd. And what we'll do is we'll just ask a variety of questions here, some of which were texted this morning, some maybe texted during the show, and others that were texted over the last few days. And you guys just answer, you know, jump right in, answer whichever ones you choose, answer all of them, whatever you want to do. So the first question here, and we'll just start with some questions from listeners. It says, please ask the candidates what they will do to fix the current rules on charter school funding. It says Rutherford County took a $12 million hit this year with the new charter schools opening. And now, with that $12 million hit, I'm not real sure how that funnels through the county schools, but I guess basically, what are your thoughts on the charter schools and the current rules with charter schools?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation that's been out there, and those numbers are not correct. And first of all, charter schools are an extension of public schools. They're still a part of public school system. They're authorized and to operate independently so that they can have different rules within the public school system. The employees are still considered public. It's a part of that is a part of the public funds. They also have outside investors that come in and build the buildings and invest in that. So it reduces the burden on taxpayers. There is some information that was put out that is not correct on as far as a $12 million hit. It's some of this is delayed on the back end and some of it's on the front end. Where the confusion is coming into play is budgeting. The public school system gets its numbers currently. The charter school system, since it operates independently and differently, gets their numbers from last year, so they're not updated till the end of the session. So they operate on that information that determines funding is operated differently as far as the information of how the school needs to operate its budgeting. But a few issues did pop up, and we are addressing those with the State Department of Education. I have also contacted the Charter School Commission, as well as the Charter School Association and the State Department of Education to get all this kind of worked out. And there are some tweaking that can be done whenever something's brought up, and we'll address that at the next session if it needs addressing.
There is plenty of issues and things that have popped up as a result of the new funding formula, and I think this is one. I think the simplest thing that has to be changed is, at the very least, when you look at state authorized charter schools, those are the ones that were not approved. There's only one in Rutherford County that was not approved by the local education authority, and those being required to still be funded up front the same way that the other charter schools are funded here in Rutherford County, that one has to be fixed especially. I would also like to see us address how public school systems are funded, period, and when and how they're funded. We're adding between 1,200 to 1,500 students a year and throughout the school year in the Rutherford County school system, and we're missing out and losing out on millions and millions and millions of dollars because we are funded that way. So addressing that, and also with that guideline from how charter schools would be funded, especially the state authorized charter school, that was sent to the local education authority 45 days before the new fiscal year, and created a lot of problems. As much as possible, especially around funding, needs to be worked out and figured out in policy and in statute, and not left up to Department of Education and not elected officials as much as humanly possible.
And again, that was Tucker Markham, and just before him was Tim Rudd. And some of these questions, these are questions that I'm literally reading as they come in. So if, for example, the $12 million was not correct, I'm just literally going off of what is read. So if you see something that should be corrected in what's said, then definitely do so, correct it. Here's another question. Abortion is and will be an ongoing topic. Where do you stand on this issue, and where would you like to see the state when it comes to abortion?
I'm pro-life. I believe life begins at conception. I am really glad that we updated our law to include life of the mother exceptions. I think that is good policy and good politics. But when we talk about these issues, I say I'm pro-life from the womb to the tomb. We also need to be prioritizing and focusing on that to the tomb part of pro-life issues. And I think that's what helps grow the party. I say all the time, you know, hey, as Republicans here in Rutherford County, we're a little fat fat and happy right now and don't have to earn these elections. And that's not always going to be the case. And talking about these issues of life when we work on not just the abortion side of it and protecting the life of the unborn, but also being pro-life to the tomb, I think is what helps build the party, welcomes folks into the party, and allows us to continue to compete down the road.
I have always been pro-life. As a matter of fact, going back to the early 1990s, I was the treasurer for Tennessee Volunteers for Life, which became Right to Life. I've been endorsed every year I've been in, including this year, by Tennessee Right to Life. We're giving their highest rating. A couple of years I didn't fill their surveys out, so they don't endorse, but they give you the highest rating. They endorsed me this year. I've had a consistent pro-life record for all 8 years I've been in office, and I'm very proud of that record. I voted for resorting back to the, when Roe versus Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court, I voted to resort back to the 1973 law. And the 1973 law then and now, we didn't change it this year, said that it's the life of the mother. Abortion, all other abortions are not allowed. What we did do is we went in and defined to protect doctors that performed abortions when it is the life of the mother. We gave them a little bit more definition and protection, so when they had to perform these surgeries to save the mother. But we have one of the absolute strongest pro-life laws in the entire country. I'm proud of that, and I have a very strong pro-life voting record, and I also believe at life at conception.
And again, that was Tim Rudd, and before him was Tucker Markham. And this morning, once more, this is a political forum with the Republican primary candidates, and this is for the State House of Representatives in the 34th District. And our guests today include incumbent State Representative Tim Rudd, and then also running against him, Tucker Markham. And another question we have here, it talks about illegally occupying abandoned properties, or I guess that would be squatting, saying this has become a problem. It's become a problem, they're saying, and it's asking what can be done about illegal squatting.
Well, I mentioned that briefly earlier. Earlier this year, I had known in Atlanta squatting, abandoned people moving into abandoned properties, even properties that are occupied when people are on vacation or out of town on business. It's become a huge problem. When people move into an abandoned property, if the individual, whether they're an illegal immigrant or a legal immigrant or an American citizen that are doing this, all three of those are doing this, that if they know how to manipulate the legal system, they can cost the owner of the property up to $50,000 in legal expenses plus damage to property, and can take up to 2 years to get them out. And everybody thinks that, well, it's my home. The sheriff, you call the sheriff out, sheriff don't know who's telling the truth, because they say, well, I have a lease, I'm legally here. He's trying to go back on his word when there was never an agreement. So I passed a law, became aware of this, and then I also heard in Chattanooga, Nashville, and Memphis, it was becoming a problem. And what really alarmed me is I found out that Georgia and Florida and Alabama were getting ready to pass legislation on anti-squatting, and I figured that was going to shove these people into Tennessee. And with all the new construction and growth that we have in our urban areas, those are prime pickings for people to move into these properties. And it has already become a pretty substantial problem in Memphis, Shelby County. So I looked around the country and had legal look around to see which laws that have been passed would address this. And the best law that I found written that would fit Tennessee was Florida. So we based our bill on Florida's bill that was passed this year, which all Democrats and all Republicans voted yes on. And I modeled it after that. So it is now law, will become law. It's law today on the 1st. And it basically streamlines the system to 72 hours if the sheriff has time to implement it. You now, if you're the property owner, you can go file a complaint, meet all the criteria under sworn oath and oath of a violation of perjury if you lie. And then once you filled this out, the sheriff verifies with the register of deeds that it is, in fact, you are the legal owner, and then they can proceed immediately if they have time to go out and throw them out at that point. If the individuals refuse to leave, they can be charged with a felony. Now, this does have exceptions. If you are a current or past lessee or a former owner, whether a business partner or in divorce, it does not apply to you. That has to be settled in civil court as it is now. So that's the law. It's effective today in Tennessee.
All right. Another question we have here. This one is asking if you think it's ethical for the mayor, and I guess this would refer to Mayor Joe Carr, to hire and spend taxpayer dollars on lobbyists. And I guess this would go back to the impact fee talk or the school facilities tax discussion, which I believe did pass, and that amount was increased with that school facilities tax charging per square footage, however much money per square footage on new construction.
Well, as far as the county or the mayor, the county hires the lobbyists, and they technically report to them, or they report to both. They're free to do what they want. Other counties and cities have some lobbyists, and some have their mayor and elected officials be the lobbyists. They're free to do what they want there. It's nothing illegal them doing that. It is in this case, it has been a somewhat of a hindrance, because we're up there trying to pass legislation, and sometimes lobbyists, I'm not necessarily talking about Rutherford County, it could be other cities' lobbyists, comes on when we're trying to work a deal out between the Senate and the House or House members to get something passed. A lobbyist working behind the scenes can complicate that substantially, and certainly complicated it this year. You know, last year the County Commission passed the resolution wanting an impact fee. And I've never been opposed to growth paying for itself or a development tax. That particular one would never have passed. It's always failed before. And we tried to tell them, the delegation tried to tell them, that it just simply was not viable in the way it was written, the way it was formed. Since the 2006 County Powers Act, no amendment to that County Powers Act has been passed implementing to give a county unlimited taxing authority, and with no caps, which is what the County Commission wanted. And we tried to tell them, work with us, we'll pass something else, but they wouldn't work with us. So this year, we went and got the builders, the developers, the realtors, and the Chamber of Commerce together, and we worked out a deal around the table over 8 months. It wasn't just a deal with the local builders, who were glad to help. They just wanted to be talked to and consulted. It was statewide, because to get something like this passed, you have to get 99 votes, the majority of 99 votes. It's not just us signing off on something. When we were working out this measure, the county passed the same resolution again that couldn't pass, never has passed. Even the current mayor voted against resolutions like this when he was in the state legislature. It simply was not viable. So we worked out a deal. Most of the negotiations were in myself and Shane Reeves' office. And we worked the deal out so that statewide, the builders, developers, and realtors could agree to it, or agree to say or be quiet on it. And we had to pull in every favor we could to get it passed. And it's going to benefit the county anywhere from $14 to $16 million a year for schools. That's almost tripling what the current one was. And all during that whole process, the county's a lobbyist was working against us, trying to get it defeated. And it's like that was the only deal on the table. If it didn't pass, there wasn't going to be one passed. It's awful when people won't work with you to get something passed. It is not easy to get anything passed in the legislature that's in any way controversial or deals with taxes or fees. But we managed to get it passed, and it is the very first time that the County Powers Act was amended since 2006 in this way. They've had minor amendments or changes, but this is the first time. But the lobbyists in this case did work against us at the direction of the county government.
That was filled with misrepresentation and lies. First and foremost, it's the only lobbyist that Tim Rudd doesn't like, period. I fully support that effort, especially when you have state representatives and legislators that purposefully and intentionally work against and don't have an incentive to build good relationships with our local elected officials, right? They had to explore additional options. On the solution, quote unquote, that he mentioned, the number is closer to $7 million, which is the debt service on a middle school when we are growing 12 to 1,500 children a year. This is the largest issue we're facing as a county. We are in crisis level with how we are going to pay for the cost of new services as a result of this growth. I fully support the county's effort to have the autonomy and how they choose to pay for growth. Fully support it. If there's a resolution from 2021 of my county commissioners asking for something, I'm going to do everything in my power to work to make it happen and try to carry the water for it. With that piece of legislation that did pass, every single concession that could have possibly been made to the lobbyists and special interests, all of Tim's friends, was made. was made. A couple different things. You're talking about when the payment from the developer comes to the county. That was a concession that was made, changed from half up front to half at the back, half at the back to fully on the back end once CO is issued. You had, I believe it was upwards of 80% of folks were paying the full adequate facilities fee upfront, period, not splitting it into two payments. So you're delaying payment there. And once again, the number is a debt service for one middle school in terms of revenue produced. They also added in a commercial aspect to it, which caps at a certain level at 150,000 square feet. And I don't feel that it's right that when WGNS is building their new studio, that they are hurt more and hit more on an additional growth fee than if Walmart comes in building a new building. It's not a great deal. It's not fair for the local businesses, expanding businesses, compared to a lot of the big corporations coming into town. I fully support the county's effort. Like I said, we are in crisis level with how we're going to pay for the cost of growth. We're $800 million behind capital projects for schools. That's before you factor in additional infrastructure needs, fire, sheriff, EMS. There's zones in this county where there was one sheriff deputy last night. We are not able to retain our first responders and especially sheriff's deputies the way we need to. A lot of that as at a result of the pay and resources that the county has. A lot of folks understand this. You know, the federal government, the local government's not the federal government, not the state government. There is a very conservative budget that grows at a lesser rate than even the state budget grows. The vast majority of the services that the county provides is constitutionally or statutorily mandated that they provide it. Yet they do not have the autonomy to choose how to pay for it. I've knocked over 8,000 doors. I've talked to so many folks who really feel the effect of these property tax increases. I think property taxes are the more immoral tax that we have, right? But they've always existed to maintain service, not to provide new service. And that's what they're being used right now. And all the county's asking for is additional revenue sources outside of property taxes to make up for this cost, to cover the cost of growth more than it's covering now. And nobody's under the impression that this is the only revenue source that is needed or wanted. Not one person has said that. Nobody supports that. But I'll stand with our county commissioners and really support their ability to have the autonomy to choose how they pay for growth, especially around growth and development fees.
Again, that was Tucker Markham, and before him was Tim Rudd. And this morning, once more, a political forum with Republican primary candidates seeking that state House of Representatives seat, 34th District. And again, with us today, incumbent Tim Rudd, and also running against him, Tucker Markham. Here is another question dealing with marijuana. It says, state laws across the country continue to change on the legalization of marijuana and also products containing THC. Talk a little bit about what you would like to see in the state in the future with this.
I support a medical cannabis program. We are surrounded by states, even the most conservative states in the union, that have already implemented a medical cannabis program. I support and have supported the bills that have been proposed over the years for a medicinal cannabis program. It can provide real benefits. I also believe that it's a way to address and alleviate the opioid epidemic that our country and especially state and even county is facing. Not the full part of the solution there. So fully support that. I also wouldn't support any rollbacks from the Department of Ag or the legislature on the farm bill that has been proposed and talked about the last couple months and year.
I have consistently opposed the legalization of marijuana. As far as medical marijuana, I've always said that I could support medical marijuana if the federal government authorizes it. Right now, they've made it illegal. We also have alternatives. Right now, you can have oils and pills if the federal government would authorize that rather than smoking medical marijuana. However, it is a federal law right now that you can get medical marijuana under federal law if a doctor prescribes it and a pharmacy fills it, which is the way it should be. It should not be available just vape shops like it is in other states. But nobody wants to do that at the federal level, including Colorado, because once a doctor starts writing those prescriptions, the federal government comes in and regularly audits their office, and they don't want the feds in their office, understandably. So if the feds would just simply address the problem they created and clearly define under the Federal Drug Administration what is and is not legal, it would make it a lot easier us at the state level. But I'm not prepared to support a law unless it's a violation of a constitutional right. I'm not prepared to pass a state law that's in direct violation of a federal law, and this would be, as it is in other states, because the federal administration could change. You get an attorney general that comes in and starts enforcing those laws, which means they can confiscate property and seize property that is connected to marijuana, and I don't want to put Tennesseans in that position. But for those who are in extreme pain, especially some of our veterans, they're looking for a cheaper alternative than pain medication and a less addictive. It's up to the feds to change the rules so that we can start addressing it legally at the state level.
That kind of goes in line with this next question about prescribed medications. It says, we've seen so many changes in the way opioids are prescribed in Tennessee, some of which have really hurt those who may be chronically ill or have ongoing pain that needs to be treated. And then it goes on to talk about some of these patients have to go through costly drug screenings that are up to $700 or $800 on each doctor visit, and they have to go to the doctor more often. So what would you possibly see or like to see changed in the future when it comes to things like these prescribed pain medications?
We have an opioid epidemic in this country, and as well as in Tennessee, especially in the larger metropolitan areas. It's a huge problem in Shelby County. And this has been fostered by the Biden administration's open border policies, where fentanyl and other drugs are just flowing across virtually unattended. I mean, they're just flowing into the country from China and other parts of the nation, of the world. And we pass law after law to do what we can to crack down, plus to provide treatment for those addicted to drugs. But Tennesseans are dying every week because of what's flowing across the open border along Mexico. So we've done everything we can to address that at the local issue. And Dr. Terry, a state rep from the East Rutherford, has been one of the leaders in this effort because he's chairman of health. And we will continue to address the problem as much as we can. But with the federal government just opening the borders, we got to get control of that border first, and hopefully by the new president come January. And maybe this can start being a little bit more curtailed.
To be clear, the root cause of the opioid epidemic was pharma companies, period. I do want to commend Commissioner Craig Harris, who has really led the charge on the Rutherford County side on combating the opioid epidemic. There was the several lawsuits filed over the past, probably 10 years at this point, that have resulted in large payouts that went to states as well as counties. And Craig's done an amazing job at creating the Rutherford Opioid Board and implementing programs to use that money efficiently to create awareness of the issue, especially to our youth, as well as address recovery efforts. And right now in Rutherford County, if there is somebody who is addicted to drugs and they want help, no matter your situation, there are resources that gets you the help that you need. So incredibly proud of Commissioner Harris on that, and really excited to work with him to see how we can partner on the state level to assist those efforts. What he's done and the county commission has done is being replicated, or wants to be replicated, by many, many, many counties across the state. And I'm excited to be able to work with him to do what we can on the state level to support those efforts.
Again, that was Tucker Markham, and before that was Tim Rudd. Another question here, it says, how do you feel about protecting transgender as well as protecting the LGBTQ rights? Doesn't really specify what rights, in general.
Tucker?
Yeah, I think very open-ended question there. It depends on the piece of legislation. I think absolutely that we've passed great pieces of legislation that keeps this stuff out of our K-12 public education system, which I think is absolutely fantastic and great. I think that a lot of those conversations should happen between parents and their child and government, and especially in the K-12 education system, that should not be introduced. So I'll continue to support those efforts as well, but I think we've been in a good place with that as well.
We've passed significant legislation, actually sweeping legislation, that addresses all this. It's not really a matter of protecting LGBTQ and transgender rights. It's protecting those who are not transgender's rights. We got into this whole woke policy nationwide that's been implemented by the Obama and by the Biden administrations, and it is eroding our society. We're losing focus on what's right and wrong, and what's normal, and what's acceptable, and what has to be done. A good example of this, it is ridiculous to say that a boy who feels like a girl can participate in girls' sports and take their scholarships away from them, their championships away from them, because ultimately, regardless of the way you feel, your bodies are built differently. And in most cases, if you take two athletes of the opposite sex, a boy is going to be stronger, their muscles are built differently, their muscle mass is different, their bone structure is different, the thickness of their bones are all different. And no matter what type of treatments or plastic surgery you have, you're not going to change that. You can't change the DNA. So we passed sweeping legislation that protects girls and boys from the opposite sex. It prevents boys from going into girls' sports. And our K-12, as well as college education, you have to participate in the biological sex you were born if you're going to participate. It also prevents them from going in and changing in showers and participate in their locker rooms with them. So we're protecting girls in that way. Most importantly, their scholarships and their sports and things they've earned through a life of work. So we've outlawed that in Tennessee. We also ended the mutilation of children who have who counselors and parents may want to have transgender surgery. That medication, once taken in the surgery, cannot be reversed. It does extreme damage. So if you're under 18, we've protected children in Tennessee from that, and transporting people out of state for that as well. And if you're 18 and you still want to do that, that's up to you. You're an adult. But as a child, a major surgery and treatment like that should not be allowed. And we outlawed that in Tennessee.
And that was Tim Rudd, the incumbent. And just before him was Tucker Markham. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back. We'll try to get to as many questions as we can here. Our number, 615-893-1450. If you'd like to text a question in, we will attempt to get to it. Again, 615-893-1450. This is a political forum with those running for the Republican primary. And the candidates here are, again, incumbent Tim Rudd and Tucker Markham. This is for the State House of Representatives 34th District seat. Time again right now, 8:45.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Residents enjoy Adams Place.
At Adams Place, they have different things, entertainments, and things that you can get out and keep your mind going.
We're talking with Helen Alexander.
And that's what I like about Adams Place. I think most, although the food, I am very blessed to be here at Adams Place.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adams Place.
Capstar is now a division of Old National Bank. You'll notice some changes as we complete the transition to Old National Bank. The Murphy Spread team that you know and trust at Capstar are always ready to serve you. We'll temporarily use Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, until the transition's complete. As always, we're ready to serve you at Capstar Bank, a division of Old National Bank, member FDIC.
He's local. Certified financial planner Jason Qualls. Financial Coaching Radio. Weekdays at 4 on News Radio WGNS.
This morning we have a political forum, and we're talking to those running in the 34th district, and this is the Republican primary, and the candidates are, again, incumbent Tim Rudd and also running Tucker Markham. And again, we'll try to get to as many questions as we can here. Another one asked, would you support a state income tax with the increase of funds to be used for state services? Now, right now, we don't have a blanket state income tax. So I guess it's asking if we did have one, would you support one, period?
No, I wouldn't.
No, we outlawed that in the legislature. The only thing, we outlawed that and put it in the Constitution. We did have a what was called a Hall Hill income tax on savings, and we outlawed that as well. That was one of my first votes to reaffirm what the previous session had already done. So both of those are illegal, and I think it has proven to have a very, very stable tax base because of our high degree of tourism in Shelby, Davison, and in the Smokies. So we get a lot of outside income in, so it's been very good. We currently have the right to have a property tax at the state level, which we don't have. And I voted to voted for a constitutional amendment to outlaw that as well, and that is in the process of removing that from the Constitution.
So that was a proposed state property tax?
Well, right now it's in the state constitution that we can have a state property tax, which we haven't had in, I don't know, 60, 70 years. So there's a constitutional amendment out there, which actually the person who started that movement was Rob Mitchell, our own assessor, to outlaw that and remove it from the Constitution so that there will never be a state property tax. Right now there isn't one, and I supported that measure.
All right, next question here deals with illegal immigration. What are your thoughts on illegal immigration, and what can be done about illegal immigration?
Well, what we've done here, again, this is a big federal issue with the Biden administration with open borders. Over 11 million, at least a minimum of 11 million illegals have crossed the border and are flooded all over the United States. And, of course, at the state level, we have limited what we can do. We have outlawed so that they can't get state IDs, they can't get state benefits, they can't get other state supported activities. But, of course, there's always a possibility of fraud. We've strengthened that. We check all of our databases, whether you're registering to vote or whether you're applying for benefits. We check all the databases available, but the Biden administration keeps trying to deny the state access to databases to check, but we keep finding ways around that, and that's a huge problem. But we've, at the state level, we've done almost everything we can. Every time there's something new that pops up, we address it. It's hard to tell what this administration is going to do from one day to the next, though. He actually had mentioned in the final closing days of the state legislature this year about, through an executive order, giving them all photo IDs. And right now, you can use a federal or state photo ID to do a lot of activities in the state. So if they actually issued a federal photo ID, we'd have to change our state laws there. But even then, we would be limited what it could apply to, because if it was the federal government or getting benefits that were funneled through Tennessee, channeled through Tennessee, we'd be limited in what we could do there. So we have put up, the conservative majority, super majorities in the House and Senate here, have put up a lot of roadblocks going back to the vaccines and up to this present day with illegals, but it's only so much we can do. But we keep doing everything we can. Every time there's a little leak in the wall and the dam, we try to plug it.
The best solution is vote in November, is what I tell folks at the doors. But yeah, got to demagnetize Tennessee, and I think we've done a good job. The state's done a good job at that. You know, folks consider the safety aspect of it, which is incredibly large and incredibly important, but you also have a real local tax effect. You know, city school systems hired 20 ESL teachers, need more. The county's hired 60, needs more. Something I want to examine and look at is, English as a second language students are weighted the exact same way as a English as a first language student in the funding formula and performance-based funding formula. And that requires and puts a lot of pressure on our administrators, our school board, and especially our teachers to ensure that those folks perform the way they need to perform. Otherwise, funding would be affected. So that's something I want to look at. I think that also gives a little bit of relief and breath to our local education authorities, and is another thing that kind of sends a little bit of a message and a signal that, hey, when you come over the border, you have 48 states to choose from. Let's make sure there's not a single reason or single incentive to come to Tennessee.
And another question here, where do you stand on same-sex marriages in Tennessee, and do you want to see a change in that in the future?
Well, I have always been opposed to that. Marriage is a religious institution. You can get a civil union here. A Supreme Court decision made that. There is no law requiring it, but they made it so that clerks would have to issue that you know, marry and issue the license. I'm against that. Like I said, the whole purpose of marriage is not just a civil union itself, but to produce children and offspring, and you can't do that unless you adopt or have a science intervene. I don't think we should have a marriage except between a man and a woman.
I personally don't think the government should be involved in marriage. I think, you know, it's not, it's one man, one woman under God, not under the county clerk, is my opinion on it. But the law of the land right now is what it is. And unlike Tim, I'm not a fan of passing bills and pieces of legislation that will go and get shot down in court.
Again, that was Tucker Markham, and before that was Tim Rudd, the incumbent. And here's another question that says, what about creating a workforce for immigrants instead of pushing them out? And how many Americans do you notice that are installing roofs, etc., and doing construction jobs? Well, I guess illegal immigrants, I guess, is what they're suggesting, a work program, a workforce program for illegal immigrants.
I don't know exactly what that question's about. I do know that all the illegals, mainly, which are flooding in, they're in the small towns, they're here, they're everywhere, but mainly have been flooded into large metropolitan areas like Los Angeles and, of course, all of the larger areas in Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Fort Worth, all that in Texas, since they're right on the border. But New York and Atlanta and Memphis and others are getting flooded. They're taking minority jobs or destroying minority communities. The Biden administration's giving them housing, giving them support, giving them cell phones, giving them rights. And that's one of the biggest reasons why up to 31% of the African-American community is voting for Trump, and why almost 38% of the Hispanic community is voting for Trump, if not more. It's because of the open border policy and the effect it's having on the economies and the school systems and the health care of all these states that are being affected.
I wouldn't support that. One bill that the legislature passed in 2022 that Tim actually skipped the vote on was a bill that would give allow illegals to have business licenses and receive business licenses. That was very concerning. But no, I wouldn't support those programs. No, sir.
And again, here is another question. It says, this one talks about education, saying that our education system is in a crisis. How can we do something to more so focus on the children in helping our education system? Now, I know it doesn't give any exact questions there, but I guess maybe, for example, teachers. I know the teacher pay was recently increased, or at least mandated to be increased across the state. What else can we do in education?
You said something really important there about teacher pay increase being mandated. There are so many instances of the state government sending down unfunded mandates to the municipalities and especially the counties. And that's an example of a quote unquote good one, right? Where the legislators get a run around bragging about teacher pay increases, yet there was no dollars attached to that, directly attached to that. And the local education authorities are having to make up the difference. I fully support our public education systems. I think Rutherford County schools and Murfreesboro City schools is the best, or some of the best in the state, if not the nation. I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that the funding formula and the funding they receive is beneficial. We have a great school system, but they are financially struggling to keep up with the demand of growth and finding seats and having seats for our students to sit in. So fully support public education. I'll work directly with the school board, with both superintendents, to assist any way I can. I also fully support Tennessee Consolidated Retirement System, TCRS. Anytime there's a large pot of money sitting there, politicians always like to find a way to mess with it, and that is one of the big reasons, or a reason, why folks get in and stay in these public service jobs, like public school teachers, like higher education employees, like local government, some local government employees and state employees as well. So I'll always defend TCRS and always be an advocate for public education. I'm a product of public education and think Rutherford County has some of the best schools we can possibly have, but they are struggling right now financially to keep up with the demand, and also, you know, on the operational side, because there's less flexibility in the funding that they receive, and a lot of it having to go towards seats seats to have seats for kids to sit in right now.
That's just another example of the lies and misinformation that my opponent puts out continuously. The teacher pay raises by the state are paid by the state. They're not mandates. The state actually funds those. We have increased it. We changed the funding formula just 2 years ago to the current one so that especially fast-growing counties like Rutherford would get more money. It was a dramatic increase in what the state's funding. It actually helped balance the budget last year with the schools because of the money we put in under the new funding formula. So those pay raises that the state passes down, we fund those. We don't mandate those. Now, if the county wants to match them or if they want to expand them beyond teachers, that's up to them. But we have been doing that almost since the nearly every year since the Republicans took control in 2010 that we've been doing that. And every year since I've been in, we've been giving teachers pay raises and benefit increases. And we will continue to try to do that. We also increased dramatically through this funding formula the county schools, especially fast-growing counties. You've got to tell the public the truth and not misinform them. And this is a continuing practice of my opponent, just to put out this crap and the public and confuse them about the reality of truth.
I want to add to that real quick. So, and actually, former Commissioner Rick Hall on a radio show up here with me a couple weeks ago mentioned this. I think the states and all education systems are struggling and figuring out how to pay for the cost to provide education, especially capital projects. However, our problems and challenges in Rutherford County are pretty unique to Rutherford County. Rick mentioned how just the population of Rutherford County school system is large. There are only 20 counties that have a total population that's larger than the amount of children in our Rutherford County school system. So our problems are incredibly unique, and they need to really be addressed, and someone who's going to be a constant advocate to increase funding, not just in the funding form, but especially for Rutherford County, who doesn't have the flexibility on how to pay for the cost to provide new services and the cost of growth. And it's very unique to Rutherford County, and someone that's going to recognize that and advocate for that, I think, is very important.
That was Tucker Markham, and before that was Tim Rudd. And as we close this morning, maybe do about a one-minute wrap-up on your background again, if you want to. And I guess we started with Tucker. Tim, let's start with you.
All right. Well, I'd like to address one thing. You know, it's been brought up during this whole campaign and today by my opponent. You know, he's 22 years old. He's still immature. He still needs to learn that in politics, you have to stand for something and not just against everything. And one of the things, over the weekend, he put out a mailer on me that's just filled with lies. Nearly everything in it's a lie. One of the latest, he's called me a con artist. He said that here's the biggest lie here. He said that I took $46,000 on a loan and didn't report it. That's a lie. Under state law, I don't have to report that on my statement of interest because it's already got a lien. If it's already got a public record and it's a secured loan, you don't have to report that. I contacted the Ethics Commission, and I had a letter back from 16 when I first took out the loan, and it's long since been paid off. But I asked the executive director back then, what are the rules on this? Do I need to report this? And Drew Rollins provided a letter that I didn't have to. I then contacted Bill Young and Lance Frizzell yesterday. They issued a new letter stating that I acted properly. I did not break any laws because it had a lien at the registry deeds office and it was paid off. So that's just another example how he says, libeled me, says that I broke the law six times when I didn't report this. That is an absolute lie and fabrication. Everything else in here, these phony checks, everything else he's said about me, he's accused me of profiting from my office, which I've never profited from office. He has accused me of taking direct money with Phoenix, Glenn Cassidy's company he was involved with. I didn't spend any money with Phoenix. The caucus spent money on a survey, but I had no contact with them. They selected the vendor. I didn't. That's why when all the members that had done business with Phoenix was called before grand jury, I was the only one that wasn't because I had never had any contact with Phoenix, and I didn't actually work with them. He's quoted a heavy, heavy-handed partisan Democrat magazine as proof of this. I wouldn't be quoting a Democrat, but my opponent has made a career of political consulting, of working for Democrat campaigns and Democrat causes. So I think that speaks all for itself that he can't be trusted. I would never, ever in my life take money to work in a Democrat campaign like he has against fellow Republicans and against the Republican cause. This whole thing, he's just so full of anger, so full of venom towards me. And I have worked hard and been ethical. In my 34 years of volunteering and in office, I've never been accused of any wrongdoing or anything unethical till this ridiculous mailer came out the other day. And I have proof here again from the Tennessee Ethics Commission that he lied on this mailer, and I wished he would apologize publicly for that.
And that was Tim Rudd, incumbent, and Tucker?
You just heard him say he did take a loan from a mega developer and has done the bidding of lobbyists and special interest in the industry for the 8 years that he's been in the state legislature, on top of the tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars taken directly by the PACs that support those initiatives. Just said it. I will be a constant advocate for the folks of Rutherford County. I believe you need to be working for the people of the 34th District and Rutherford County, and not the lobbyists and special interest groups in Nashville that have funded Tim's campaign, and he's found a way to personally profit as well, as he just said. I'm honored to have the support and endorsement of over 15 local elected Republican officials. They know what you and I know, that you can't work with Tim to address these issues that we are address these issues that Rutherford County is facing. I'm a Republican. I've been going to GOP meetings since I was a snot-nosed 13, 14-year-old. My first ever time getting politically active was volunteering for a candidate in the same exact race in the Republican primary against Tim Rudd. So I've been consistent over the last 8 years. Have done more to help elect Republican officials here in Rutherford County than almost anybody here in the last six years. Incredibly proud of it. I'm incredibly excited about the opportunity to be able to go and work with the folks in Nashville, and especially our local elected officials and community leaders, to address the largest issues we're facing in Rutherford County. You have to feel that weight, that there is 75,000 people that are paying you to be doing a job, and you have to feel that weight. You have to show up. You have to be present. You have to give folks an opportunity to let you know what they want you to prioritize and you to focus on, and not go in hiding. I'll be constantly present. One of the biggest things, just to add this and I'll close, Tim says that just in the last 12 months, I mean, Tim has spent, or has made thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars attacking a sitting mayor, sitting council members, sitting Murfreesboro City Council members, a member as well. I think that's absurd. I think you have to sit there and build good relationships with our local elected officials, and that is going to determine your ability to build good relationships in Nashville. I would appreciate your vote running in the Republican primary August 1st. My cell phone number is 615-663-6836. You need anything, any issue you want to talk about, please don't hesitate to give me a shout. Thank you for the opportunity, Scott.
And that was Tucker Markham. We'll post this on our website as a podcast in just a little while at WGNSradio.com. Local news comes your way next. You're listening to WGNS Murfreesboro.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.